Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
It is every parent's nightmare unfolding in South Jersey. The search is on for an 11-year-old Cape May County boy missing since yesterday afternoon. So far, searchers have found only his left sneaker near his home.
Hello, and welcome to the Vanished Podcast. I am taking a short break from covering Larry Hall to do some more research on the other possible victims that I would like to cover. It is frustrating because many of them are missing crucial details surrounding their disappearances. Some even have conflicting information. Today, I will be covering the disappearance of 11-year-old Mark Heimbaugh. I apologize for the delay in the release of this episode. Researching Mark's disappearance became distressing for me, and I started becoming anxious and having nightmares. It is one of those cases that embodies so many horrible possibilities of things that we would like to think do not happen to children. I think that it is an important case to cover because so many of the suspects are still out there and could potentially pose a danger to others. I think this case is solvable because I am convinced that there are other people out there who know more. Mark was an 11-year-old boy living in Delhaven, New Jersey, with his mother and older brother. Mark had been having some behavioral issues and had been put on Prozac. He had been experiencing some angry outbursts, but the medicine was helping him. It is thought that he may have had obsessive-compulsive disorder. November 25, 1991 started off just like any other ordinary day. Mark came home from school that afternoon and watched some TV. Around 3 p.m., Mark heard sirens nearby and asked permission to go check out what was going on. His mom said yes. There was a brush fire about a quarter of a mile away from their home. If you want to look this up on Google Maps, his address was 214 Sunray Road, Delhaven, New Jersey. I will mention several other locations that can be found on Google Maps as well. He was seen climbing his father's amateur radio tower around that time. Around 3:20, Mark's mom left to take a neighbor to an auto body shop just minutes away from their home. She saw Mark near the driveway and told him that she would be right back. He replied, "Okay, Mom." Due to the fire, traffic in the area was rerouted down their street, so his mom's quick errand took almost an hour. Because of this, people who normally would not have been traveling through their neighborhood were forced to take that route. Shortly before 3:30, four teens spotted Mark exiting sand dunes onto Delaware Avenue. At 3:30, neighbors saw him walking north on Delaware Avenue. At 3:45 p.m., a ranger who knew Mark saw him in the nearby Cape May County Park South with a young girl that he did not recognize. The girl was described as being around 9 to 10 years old, about 4 feet tall, 70 to 75 pounds, with light brown or dirty blonde hair. She was wearing a 3/4 length dark blue ski parka with a hunter's orange stripe on the back. This girl has never been identified, which is interesting because police circulated a flyer with a sketch of her. You would think that if she was from the area that someone would have come forward. Mark's mom got home at 4:15 p.m. and realized that Mark was not home. She began to panic when it started getting dark out. She has said that she just got an awful feeling that something was terribly wrong. Mark had a crush on his teacher's daughter, and the family had plans to visit their home after dinner that night. Mark was really looking forward to going to their home to visit her, and his mom knew that he would not have missed it. So at 6 p.m., she called the police and reported him missing. A massive search ensued. They used helicopters with heat-sensing radar. They dredged the bay. Bloodhounds were brought in, but they could not pick up Mark's scent. At 8 p.m., a clue was finally found. Mark's LA Gear sneaker was found on a beach 75 yards from Mark's home. There were also footprints on the sand. There are a couple theories about the shoe. It could have come off during a struggle. Another less sinister explanation is that Mark took it off himself. He had recently broken his foot, and although it had healed, he still complained that the sneaker pinched that foot. I will add here for listeners who are in different countries, late November in New Jersey is not the time of year that one would take off their shoes and walk in the water. I even looked up the weather for that day, and it was a low of 34 degrees and a high of 45 degrees Fahrenheit, which would be between 1 and 7 degrees Celsius. Police have investigated the possibility of him drowning in the bay and have ruled that out as a possibility. The initial search for Mark was called off in early December. On the one-year anniversary of Mark's disappearance, the police released a sketch of a man that was reportedly seen with Mark shortly before he disappeared. They have never released who saw them together or where. The man was described as a white male between the ages of 30 and 35 years old. He was between 5'8" and 5'9" and 150 pounds. The poster says that this man and another man were seen in the company of a boy believed to be Mark. It says that the man had a scruffy, unkempt appearance and wore his hair in a ponytail. I'm going to move into suspects and theories now and also discuss some later developments as they relate to the different suspects. 18 months after Mark's disappearance, a couple who lived down the road were arrested. Joanna Cortez and her boyfriend Harry Conrad were charged with child endangerment and criminal restraint for habitually imprisoning and abusing Joanna Cortez's 11-year-old granddaughter. Mark and the little girl used to play together. Police have never been able to connect the couple to Mark's disappearance. Fast forward to February 1993, a male sex worker came forward to police with a very disturbing story. I am going to warn you now that this is very graphic. He said that on February 14th, 1993, a John named Tommy showed him a video that featured the rape of a redheaded child who was gagged and shackled. The sex worker recognized the boy from hearing about his disappearance. He asked Tommy if it was the missing boy, and he said that it was. Tommy told him that he put the sneaker on the beach to throw off the investigation. He also stated that he had taken 5 or 6 other kids. He asked the sex worker to help him get more kids. The next day, he went to the police and reported the incident. Tommy was 27-year-old Thomas Buttcavage. He was residing in Haverford Township, Pennsylvania at the time, which is about an hour and 45 minutes from where Mark went missing. 2 raids were executed at his apartment, but the video was never found. They did find a massive amount of adult pornography, which we know is not a crime, drug paraphernalia and bondage gear, including the ball gag that the sex worker described seeing in the video. They did not have enough evidence to link him to Mark's disappearance, but they arrested him on drug charges. 5 months after that, police released another sketch of a person seen with Mark shortly before he disappeared. The police have not released the circumstances of this sighting either, or why they waited so long to release it. If you look at it, it looks just like Thomas Buttcavage. I will be posting it on Twitter and Facebook, so check it out there. One thing that I would like to know, but the police have not released, is this the second man that was seen with him and the man in the ponytail, or someone else altogether? If Buttcavage asked the sex worker to help him in 1993, is it possible that he may have had help from someone else in 1991? On September 9th, 1998, Buttcavage was arrested on multiple charges of deviant sexual intercourse, sexual abuse of children, indecent assault, and corruption of minors. 2 of the boys were 11 and 1 was 12, but the abuse had started 2 years earlier. He groomed these boys with attention, money, gifts, and alcohol. Police found videotapes that showed him assaulting the boys. Court records state that he showed one boy a video of his friend's mother engaged in a sexual act with Buttcavage while her son was in the background. I wonder if anything ever happened to that boy's mother. Buttcavage was sentenced to 36 years in prison. Here is the scary thing. He is eligible for parole next year. This scares me so much because I live less than an hour away from where this man used to live. I hope and pray that they do not release this man. I would feel better if they never released him. Fast forward to 2015, the sex worker came forward and did an interview with a local news station. This makes him seem more credible to me. He was willing to put his face on television and tell his story. I will play a clip for you. This man is now terminally ill, and it sounds like this has been really weighing on him for years.
You're about to hear the words of a man who says he saw the boy on video not long after he went missing.
The man says those images have haunted him ever since, and he says he pointed police toward a key person of interest in the case. We must warn you, his story is disturbing, and he told it to NBC10 Jersey Shore Bureau reporter Ted Greenberg.
People need to know what I seen that night.
Daniel Call says it was the night of February 14th, 1993, when this man, Thomas Buttcavage, showed him a graphic video that left him traumatized.
A little boy who was shackled, handcuffed, and had a ball gag in his mouth.
Call says he is certain the boy being sexually assaulted by Buttcavage in that video was Mark Heinbaugh, who was 11 when he vanished from his Cape May County neighborhood less than 2 years earlier.
I remember looking at the little boy's face and just the look on his eyes. I mean, complete. You ever see fear just through the eyes? Man, the boy was scared to death.
Are you positive that this is the boy you saw in the video?
Yes, I am. I said, that looks like the boy from South Jersey. Tommy told me it was him. He confessed to me and said it was him. I said, well, what did you do with him? He said, oh, I did like I do the rest of them. I dispose of them. What do you mean, rest of them? He said, well, I got 5 or 6 other kids I did.
Call admits he was working as a prostitute at the time and says Buttcavage was a repeat client. He says he saw the video at Buttcavage's apartment in Haverford Township. Call, nearly 25 at the time, tells me he informed police the next day about what Buttcavage had showed him and told him about finding and taking other kids.
He kept reassuring me, I need you. I need you to help me get the little kids.
Authorities launched an investigation into Buttcavage, but he was never charged in the Heinbaugh case. He has categorically denied any involvement. 6 years later, though, Buttcavage pleaded guilty to numerous sex crime charges involving young boys in Chester County. He remains in prison.
We are going to be conducting new interviews.
During a renewed push in June to solve the Heinbaugh mystery, investigators confirmed to NBC 10 Buttcavage is one of several persons of interest in Mark's 1991 disappearance from Middle Township.
I've been in the grand juries, I testified, you know, up in Camden for the feds. They need more people to come forward on this because he's there. People seen him there.
There is Heinbaugh's neighborhood where the man in this sketch was seen talking with the boy shortly before he vanished. Police have been trying to find people who might have seen Buttcavage in that area. Call decided to speak publicly for the first time after our series of reports on the Heinbaugh case in the past few months. He also says he's terminally ill.
I just need people to know the truth of Tommy Buttcavage, you know.
Middle Township police are confident the man we interviewed is the same former prostitute who triggered the original investigation into Buttcavage. As a result of him coming forward to us, detectives are now hoping to speak with him again.
The next person of interest is Lewis Lent. A listener actually reached out to me recently and asked me about Lewis Lent. Then when I was looking at persons of interest for this case, I remembered I had read about him before, just recently actually. Lewis Lent is a child serial killer who is thankfully serving life in prison. Lent was apprehended in 1994 after he attempted to abduct a 12-year-old girl in Massachusetts. The girl was able to get away and a witness reported his license plate. While the police were questioning him, he confessed to murdering 2 other children. He claimed to have blackouts and memory loss due to a UFO encounter in 1974. It's a pretty creative excuse there. He admitted to killing 12-year-old James Bernardo in 1990 after he abducted him from a movie theater that he was a janitor at. I will spare you the details of what he did to this poor child because they are very graphic and upsetting. If you want to know more about it, you can easily find it online. James Bernardo was found in New York, which is quite far from where he went missing, but just miles from Lent's childhood home. He also admitted to killing 12-year-old Sarah Ann Wood. He abducted her from New York when she was out riding her bicycle. Her body has never been recovered. I will also spare you the details of how he claims he killed her because it's just too much. At this point, Lewis Lent is still admitting to other crimes. I will play a news clip for you now about one that he admitted to just a few years ago, and they were actively searching for the boy because it actually sounds a lot like Mark's case to me.
Law enforcement authorities announced Monday that Lewis Lent, during a prison interview with investigators about a month ago, confessed to killing Jamie Lusher. He told police he put the teen's body in a pond in Beckett. The authorities said they were able to independently verify the details of the crime Lent gave in his confession. Police divers will start searching the pond on Tuesday. James Lusher, the missing boy's father, was present for the public announcement of the break in the case.
My closure is finding my son, his body. I could care less what happens to Lewis Lent. He can rot in hell, I don't care. It's my son's to know where he'll die.
Although authorities long suspected Lent was responsible for the Westfield boy's disappearance in November 1992, James Lusher said he was never completely convinced.
Now I about 99.9% believe that he in fact was responsible. I believe that Jamie is where he says, but unless you have physical evidence, there's always that tiny, tiny little chance that this guy's lying. And that, for me, that would be what I want to know. That's my closure.
Jamie Lusher was last seen riding his bicycle away from his father's house on November 6, 1992. The bicycle was found a few days later near a pond in Westfield that was drained by police during the fruitless search for the missing boy.
There were specific indicators to us that maybe this time it was the time that Mr. Lent really kind of wanted to clear his conscience and give us a broader understanding of what happened.
In exchange for revealing the whereabouts of Lusher's body, Lent will not be prosecuted for the murder, according to Hamden District Attorney Mark Mastriani. He said police will re-examine Lent's possible connections with other child abduction and murder cases.
This information and the new information gathered from Lewis Lent has reinvigorated investigative efforts in the past that have proven not to yield any information. All those investigations are now renewed.
The next person of interest is a man named Jack Lee Collin, and he has quite a history. In 1972, 19-year-old Jack was attending the University of Pittsburgh. He shot his father 5 times in the head and chest, and then shot his mother in the head until he ran out of bullets and stabbed her. Collin left his mother's body under the Christmas tree. When they searched his room, they found an odd doll collection that he kept on a shelf. He cut the feet off the dolls, painted their toenails, and kept the feet in a drawer. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity due to his paranoid schizophrenia diagnosis and was sent to a mental health facility where he lived for 5 years before being released. When he was released, he also inherited a large amount of money from his parents' estate. Seems kind of backwards, if you ask me. Gerald Cook was the hospital's chief forensic psychologist at the time. He stated that as a group, they felt like he was not a danger. He knew that Collin had sadistic fantasies involving women. He felt like he would have those fantasies for the rest of his life, but did not see any evidence that he would act on them. He eventually got married in 1983, but after several months, he started acting strange and stockpiling weapons. His wife became alarmed and hired a private investigator who informed her about his past. Collin had told her that his parents had died in a car crash. He was prohibited from owning guns, so she took pictures of his guns and showed them to the ATF. During the time that his marriage was falling apart, 3 women disappeared just minutes from his home. He is a suspect in the following cases. On November 7, 1983, 42-year-old Joyce Conan disappeared from her home in West Conshohocken, Pennsylvania, after she left to buy a greeting card. Her body was found without a head or hands, dumped in the woods in Chester County, Pennsylvania, 6 weeks later. 24-year-old Amy Matthews left her home in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania, to either walk or hitchhike to classes at Gordon Phillips Beauty School on January 3, 1984. Her school was just blocks from where Collin lived. She has never been seen or heard from again. 18-year-old Lisa Marie Garris disappeared on January 25, 1984, after leaving her Whitpain Township, Pennsylvania home to walk to meet her boyfriend. Her torso was found 3 months later on a beach in Maryland. It took 10 years to identify Lisa. Colin was arrested on weapons charges a week after the last woman went missing. Police found notebooks in his residence that described how to kill and dismember women. There were also books about bondage and pictures of him dressed as a woman. After serving 2 years on weapons charges, Colin moved to Cape May County, New Jersey in 1987. At the time of Mark's disappearance, Colin was living very close to Mark in Cape May, New Jersey, and passed through Delhaven on his way to and from work. In December 2004, police searched his home in an attempt to find evidence to tie him to the three women. He was again arrested on weapons charges, and they found 8 images of child pornography on his computer. I am not sure about Colin as a suspect. If he is in fact responsible for the three women, which the authorities seem to strongly believe that he is, Mark does not really fit his profile, but he had child pornography on his computer, which tells us that he did have an interest in children. I think his proximity to where Mark lived and went missing makes him a better suspect than some of the others, but I still don't think he's the best suspect. Just an FYI for any listeners who may live in the area, Colin has been released from prison. The final suspect in this case is a former Roman Catholic priest, William O'Connell, who had a 40-year history of abusing boys. He had been relocated to Cape May after being released from a Rhode Island prison. He had been serving time for child molestation. He was living only 2 miles from Mark's home at the time of his disappearance. He has been considered a person of interest since the start, but police could find no evidence to link him to the disappearance. In 1970, there was a complaint about O'Connell molesting an altar boy in North Tiverton, Rhode Island. So he was relocated to Bristol, Rhode Island, where he was arrested for abusing 2 boys, ages 13 and 15, in 1985. He was charged with 2 counts of secondary sexual assault. In 1986, he was charged with 26 counts of secondary sexual assault, exploitation of a minor, and related charges for abusing multiple boys between the ages of 12 and 17. He was sentenced to 5 years in jail, but under a plea agreement, he served only 1 year in jail and underwent treatment at an institute for sex offenders. I don't think that worked out too well. The Camden Diocese settled a lawsuit involving O'Connell in 1993. They paid out hundreds of thousands of dollars to victims that O'Connell and another priest had taken from Rhode Island on camping trips to New Jersey and sexually abused them. 4 other lawsuits against him for sexual abuse were pending in Rhode Island at the time of his arrest. 3 years after Mark went missing, he got caught using his position as a photographer for the Cape May County Herald to exploit young boys. He would have them come over and pay them to wash his car, and then once they got wet, he would invite them in to change their clothes. O'Connell always kept children's clothing on hand for this purpose. He would then talk them into letting him take nude photos of them and pleasured himself in front of them. 11 boys were mentioned in court records. O'Connell died while in prison. If you're interested in looking more into the corruption surrounding O'Connell and the Catholic Church, there is more information available online. The fact that other priests had been complaining about him being a pedophile dating back to the 70s, and nothing was done, is very upsetting. If you have not seen the movie Spotlight, that is a really good movie on this subject. Those are all the known persons of interest in the case. I personally lean towards Thomas Butcavage as being the most likely suspect in the group, or it could be someone who has never been identified. A couple more things that I would like to touch on in this case. The sketch of the girl that was released, I find that to be very intriguing. Certainly if it had been one of the kids in the neighborhood, someone would have recognized her. At the same time, though, why did no one else see the girl? Could the sighting be a red herring? There was a development in the case that police recently released. On December 27th, 2010, a man called Crime Stoppers from a payphone in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia. He described himself as the son of a witness of the crime. He says the name of the abductor is Gilbert Patrick Marie. I'm going to play the call for you. The police never released the entire call. When you hear the call, the man has a pretty heavy Philadelphia accent, and many wonder if when he says Marie, if he could have meant Murray or Maury.
Yes, sir. It's the National Center for Missing Children. How may we help you?
Okay. I need to know if you have a pen and paper because I'm not going to be on here long.
Okay.
Okay. 1980 or 1991, okay, there was a child missing by the name of Mark Joseph Himbaugh. H-I-M-E-B-A-U-G-H.
You said H-I-N?
B-A-U-G-H.
Okay.
As far as the site says, it's been missing since 1991.
Mm-hmm.
His mother is Maureen. He's been missing. He was born in Middle Township. He lived in Middle Township. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gilbert Patrick Murray.
And how do you believe you know this information?
I'm the son of the witness of the crime.
Okay.
The police also received an almost identical call the same day. They released the call to the public last year, hoping to find the identity of the caller or inspire the man to call again. They even traveled to that area of Philadelphia to put up flyers.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. But when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
I was lucky enough to get a last-minute interview with Joe Nick, who was a canine officer who worked on Mark's case. Joe Nick has an incredibly impressive record, and Mark's case is the only case that he's worked on that is still open.
So if you want to introduce yourself and explain a little bit about your background in relationship to the case.
Okay. My name is Joe Nick. I deal with, for 27 years, with law enforcement and canines. When Mark Heimbaugh went missing, I was one of the officers sent there with a bloodhound to assist Kate May and try to locate him.
When did you first become involved in the search? Was it immediately or within a couple of days?
What had happened was that at that time there was a mayor. The mayor of Dennis Township was Mike Bowl. Mike Bowl contacted me and asked for my assistance after approximately 6-7 hours into the case when they couldn't come up with him. He asked me would I bring in my bloodhound and try to trail Mark from his home where he was last seen by his mother.
Now, were you able to pick up a scent?
It's a hard thing to say. What happened was, of course there was human scent of Mark around his home because he was outside playing. were the dogs able to give a significant trail from his home? No, nothing that was confirmed. You know about the sneaker that was found?
Yeah.
Away from the home. You know, everybody said it was marks, you know, it appeared to be marks, but was any true trail taken from those points? No.
Now, I had seen that there was a brush fire in that area. Do you think that could present an issue for dogs to pick up his scent because of the strong smell of fire?
No. What the issue was, and what you have to realize, that day there was a brush fire. The issue was the wind was coming off the ocean. It was blowing the smoke across the road. If I were standing where Mark was, where his mother said he was, I would be beside his house, up on a house, and I was watching the fire. The fire would have been blowing from the ocean or the bay, which would have been on Mark's right, to the left, to where the main road was and went into the villas. Therefore, that odor of smoke would have never been enough to, if there were an actual scent trail, really destroy it. What smoke and the fire did do was it, because of it blowing across the road, they closed the road. They detoured the traffic directly in front of Mark's home and around his home. So instead of being on a street that little boy grew up on with one or two cars an hour, he was then faced with probably 30, 40, 50 cars an hour. So it detoured the traffic right past his home.
Yes, I had seen that when I was doing my research, that the traffic was detoured right past his house. So there was a lot of people who normally would not be in that area who could have taken him.
A lot of people in that area that not only could have or might have, but there were a lot of people in the area that probably saw something that they don't even realize they saw something, even now, years later.
Now, the one thing that I was wondering about, he had been seen by a park ranger, and he knew Mark with a young girl in the park that's, I guess, really close to his house, maybe across the street.
He was allegedly seen with a young girl at the end of the street where the road had been, traffic had been going by, and what they believed was the park. Now, the funny thing about that was, right where the road had been closed, the cars would have had to come down the road and go make a right to go towards his house due to the fire. The park would have been right across the street. That little girl was never found, never identified, nor did anyone else see it, nor did a canine unit travel that path. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And if you were thinking like I was thinking, if Mark would have been there, that would have meant he walked from his home. Could he have been? Absolutely. Well, I think he was, no. Because any little girl that would have, Mark would have been with down there, would have came forward. He knew all the girls in the area. No one ever came forward. No parent, no child ever said they were there, or they saw Mark there. So that would have meant that it was an outsider. If it was an outsider, why would someone drop off a child at his house to have him walk all the way down to the playground if you were going to abduct him? You're just creating more of a sight picture for people to see. You follow me?
Yeah. I saw her jacket was described as being blue with a bright orange hunter stripe on the back, and that to me seems like something that would definitely stand out. If you saw a little girl wearing a jacket like that, and that was on the news, that somebody would have reported that.
No one came forward. You're absolutely right. Now, could it have happened? Absolutely. You know, there's a million theories. There's a million theories. There's was someone that knew the family involved, was a stranger involved. You know, I spent 27 years working on missing children and tracking dogs and things like that with numerous cases where we found the children. In my professional opinion, the fact that the traffic was detoured by his house makes it hard for me to believe that a total stranger would be detoured driving by your house and just snatch a child out of the front yard while everybody else is being detoured the same direction. Can you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, there would have been a lot of people right there.
It would have had to been because all the traffic was detoured. There was a fire. There was. Could he have thought that he knew someone and maybe they made a left instead of a right on his road and he went to that little bit of seclusion and coaxed him in the vehicle? Absolutely. Could someone have stopped, made that left and stopped and then coaxed him and grabbed him and he lost his shoe? Absolutely. The problem is, how come no one saw anything? Most abduction cases were child missing cases when someone or no one sees anything. The individual knows the individual that's taking them. Because, example, I'm standing behind a fence and I came behind Mark's house is another road. Let's say I came down the road. Hey, Mark, come here. Hey, come on, let's take a ride. And I coaxed him in a vehicle. You follow me? No one would have seen that because that's natural. But to physically grab a child and have him screaming, someone would have seen something.
I'm assuming there was probably a lot of people standing around looking at the fire. Because usually that's what people do.
There was people walking up and down the road. There was a lot of people seeing what was going on. There was a lot of people watching the traffic to pass their homes. And it was like the world swallowed him. No one saw anything.
Now, if he were to have gotten into somebody's car, that would explain why his scent wasn't tracked anywhere. If he had gone in somebody's house, do you think that they would have picked up that trail?
If he would have went into someone's home, you would absolutely hope that a dog would have taken you there. Some of the first responding dogs were there within hours. They should have. There were some good dogs there. They should have. The car, another story. Remember what you just said. Everybody would have been in the area of his road looking at the fire. No one would have been on the road behind our houses looking. So, what better time to coax someone behind their house than then? Because no one will see me take you. And the shoe was closer to that road. There were many people of interest. There's a large group of interest in that area. Two things. A pedophile, a child abductor, a child murderer never looks like a pedophile, a child abductor, or a child murderer. They look just like you or me. Just like the priest. How many boys never came forward until after he was arrested? The answer to Mark Heimball's disappearance lies in the people that went by that house that day. If every single person that went by that house that day, you know, on that November 25th, 1991, at 3:45 p.m., if every single person remembers that little boy wearing a three-colored polo shirt, the khaki-type pants, and sneakers, if everybody would just think about that reddish hair and say, oh, I seen him, and every single person would come forward, we could build a timeline. Even in 2016, the problem is we keep bringing it up every year, but maybe the world needs to go back and say what happened. Unfortunately, everybody did everything they could. Everybody, law enforcement, everybody tried so hard, and they continue to try. His mother, she's never moved. She's never changed her phone number. She's never done nothing different in hopes that one day he'll come walk through her door. She's a phenomenal woman. Phenomenal woman. You and I both know she had nothing to do with it. Nothing.
I completely agree with you. I've seen her talk, and it's heartbreaking.
I remember she told me about looking out a window, and at least the rest of us know where our kids are when they die or are killed. We pay respect to a funeral or a casket or a gravesite. There's no greater pain, no greater pain in the world than a parent looking out a window, not knowing where their child's at. That woman has lived with it since 1991. You know, I spent my whole life along with it, thinking about the one little boy I never found. There's not a day goes by. There's not a day goes by that I look at men that have a slight resemblance and wonder, could it be him? I think the world, or maybe people like yourself, or people that write about it should say, why can't we go back? You know, there's an old saying, you can't turn back time. But in our minds, we can bring back the memory. And that's what I think we need to do. That's what, why I respect what you do and things like that. That woman has lived in hell since 1991. Now, maybe her ex-husband, maybe some of these other people, maybe they haven't. Maybe they don't care as much as she does. I believe in my heart when I've been asked. I like the abduction story. Sounds good. It's a perfect setting. But one thing I have to tell you, it's awful coincidental. I think in my heart, someone took the chance of opportunity when Mom came out and said, I'm going to run to the store and I'll be right back.
Yeah, and they heard that.
Someone, whether they heard it or they saw it, and the fire was a great thing, but I also believe that if it was planned, then the person that planned it set the fire, and I don't think that's true. So the person that abducted that child took opportunity, and at that point of opportunity, maybe the fire brought them there too, because the fire always brings children. But the only way to find the answer for you or I is to ask the world, every single person in the world who drove past that fire that day, they'll always remember that fire because they're always associated with Mark Heimbaugh. So
yeah.
Every single person that rode past that fire, when they got to the end of that road, before they made a right, what did they see? That's all we need to say. What did you see?
Mm-hmm.
That's the answer.
Yeah, and my hope is maybe somebody who lived in that area at the time has since moved away, and, you know, just hearing the story will remind them of that day. Like, oh, yeah, I was there. I saw that. I just haven't thought about it in 20 years. And to sit and think about it, maybe something will pop into their mind. When you look at him, he's not just your average little kid that you're going to, you know, mistake them for a different kid. He had that bright red hair.
Someone knows something. And maybe one day, if not tomorrow, they'll come forward and say, I remember Mark Heimbaugh. This is what I saw.
I also think people over time might, they knew something, even if it's something someone told them. Maybe at first they were intimidated and didn't come forward, but over time, the intimidation goes away, and then guilt starts to set in. As you're getting older, you have some information for most people who will start to weigh on them.
Right.
And that's why you see people with deathbed confessions and whatnot.
And that's what you hope for, because you know what? That mother deserves an answer.
Absolutely.
I think Middle Township Prosecutor's Office, Kate May, this is the case of the century to them, because that little boy deserved an answer. That mother deserved an answer. And I think that the police, it broke their hearts like it broke all of our hearts. We poured so much into it and came up empty-handed. And I think that every year, every police officer, just like myself, every law enforcement officer wishes that we could have done something. As sad as it sounds, finding a child's body would have been better than finding nothing at all. There's nothing more painful than no closure. That's why I think Middletown City Prosecutor's Office has done a phenomenal job, because they're truly trying. Every year, they bombard it. It's going to take someone, just like you say, someone's heart to feel heavy that knows something, because to be honest, somebody still walks this earth that knows the answer.
Yeah.
Maybe they could find it in their heart to tell the truth. I would just say that the people that know something, whoever it may be, needs to look in the mirror and wonder what it's like not to see your child from 11 years old 25 years later. Because I lived with that every single day. I was a young man then. I was a young man in law enforcement, and I know how the pain that I feel. I can't imagine the pain that that family feels. So I think maybe it's time we put it to bed and someone stepped to the plate and helped that knew something. Because at this point, the world just wants to know what happened to that little boy to help that mother. We all hope he's still alive, every one of us, every day. Whether that happens to be or not, closure's the only positive answer for that family.
After weeks of researching this and speaking to Joe Nick, I am left with more questions than answers. If Thomas Buckhavage is responsible, did he only show the video to one person? Could there be someone else out there who could confirm that the tape existed? If he so willingly confessed to one man, could he have told others? Did any of his other victims resemble Mark? I do not think that the abduction was planned out in advance. I think it was a crime of opportunity because the circumstances of that afternoon were not normal. I personally think someone saw Mark walking around the area and saw a chance. I think that person or persons could have used the fire as an opportunity to get close to Mark or to get him into their vehicle. I will use the priest as an example of this scenario. He could have used his position as a photographer for the local newspaper to gain his confidence and gotten him into the car with a line like, "Hey, I'm a photographer for the newspaper. Can you show me where the fire's at?" Also, anyone could have approached him and asked him for directions since the traffic was detoured. It wouldn't be odd for someone to ask how to get back out to the main road. At the time of Mark's disappearance, he was 4'6" tall and weighed 85 pounds. He had red hair, blue eyes, and lots of freckles. He was last seen wearing a blue USN sweatshirt, a gray jacket with plaid lining, gray Docker pants, and red and white LA Gear sneakers. If you have any information about Mark's disappearance, please call the Middle Township Police Department at 609-465-8700. The police are also interested in speaking to anyone who may have known Thomas Buckhavage in the 1980s or 1990s. Please check out the photos of the suspects and composite sketches that I will be posting.
In August 2014, a request was made to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to fund a review of Mark's case. We are grateful the National Center granted our request, and work began immediately to prepare the file for review. Officials from the FBI, the Cayman County Prosecutor's Office, and the Middle Township Police Department, active and retired, attended the review on February 9th and 10th of this year at the headquarters of the National Center in Alexandria, Virginia. As a follow-up to that review, the National Center has provided analysts through their Project Alert program to assist us in this investigation. We will be following up on leads and attempting to generate new tips in this investigation over the next several weeks. We will be setting up a command post for a team of detectives, special agents, and analysts to work this investigation at the Cape May County Park South off Bayshore Road in Delhaven, where Mark was last seen on Monday, November 25th, 1991. We will be starting tomorrow, operating out of that command post Monday through Friday for from the hours of 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. We hope that our presence in the area where Mark was last seen will make us more accessible to residents in the area or someone that may have information. Mark was last seen by a park guard, Ron Pettit, who has since passed away, at approximately 3:45 p.m. on Monday, November 25th, 1991, with an unidentified girl. I'd like to show you the sketch here. If anyone knows who this young girl is, we ask that you call authorities immediately.
That brings us to the end of this episode. I will be posting pictures of Mark and the suspects on Facebook and Twitter. You can find me on Facebook at The Vanished Podcast. There is also a closed discussion group on Facebook called The Vanished Podcast Discussion Group. Just ask to join and someone will approve you right away. I am on Twitter at The Vanished Pod. I also now have a call-in line for you to leave messages with your thoughts, theories, and suggestions. The number is 814-VANISH-9 or 814-826-4749. You can also email me at thevanishedpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great week, everyone.
The part for me that's hard, the not knowing if Mark is still out there, what he's been through, or if he's not out there, what may have happened. I'm in the same house for 36 years. My phone number is the same. So if he were to come home, you know, he'd come home to the same thing. You have to pray. You have to hope. You know, and believe that it can happen.
Maureen says when watching the news about the three missing Ohio girls who were found Monday, it makes her believe in miracles.
Things like this happening give me and other parents of missing children more of a chance that we could get closure.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.